Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, on KALW 91.7 FM. In the summer of 2022, anti-prison activist and playwright Sarah Shord went on a 10-city tour with the cast from a play she created about solitary confinement in our prison system. During that tour, she met with prison rights activists who are making some changes in the to the prison systems in their area, and this is all featured in her documentary, The End of Isolation. Now, you may remember Sarah made news around the world in 2009 when she was captured by Iranian guards while hiking near a tourist site in northern Iraqi Kurdistan. Sarah was held as a political prisoner and spent 410 days in solitary confinement in an Iranian prison. That work has influenced her play, this film, the healing work she does, the multimedia work she does today, and she joins me in studio. Welcome, Sarah.
It's so good to be here.
I'm happy you're here. And this film, wow, it's so many emotions in this film.
Yes.
It gives you hope. It's heavy. It's real. So many emotions.
Exactly.
So So congratulations on the documentary.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
So I just want to give people just some data. So according to a study by the news site Solitary Watch, in 2019, more than 122,000 incarcerated people, including children, were held in some form of solitary confinement in this country. And in this documentary, Sarah, we see you and your castmates, because you all are taking the play The Box, which sold out when it debuted in San Francisco in 2016.
Yes.
10 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah, 10 years ago.
Yes.
So you all had this beautiful, bright colored school bus with this beautiful mural. And it was, you know, activists and actors. And you all hit 10 cities.
We did.
How was that for you?
Oh, it was, I mean, it was so many things. It was an amazing way to come out of the pandemic,
yeah.
You know? I mean, during the pandemic, I think a lot of people could relate more to the harm of isolation.
Okay.
Or, you know, the difference between solitude and isolation,
okay.
Right?
I thought about that, too, when I was, because I live by myself. And I'm an extrovert.
Okay.
And I thought about people, and I know it's not the same, but I did think about that when I was in quarantine.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, these are points of access, right?
Yeah.
To connect our humanity to the humanity of people locked up, mm-hmm. which during the pandemic, I couldn't not think about. I was so grateful to have my own cute little house and garden and everything. And I knew that I could go into this kind of like survival mode,
right.
And go back to a dark place. But I was like, you know what? That's not going to happen, because that's not where I'm at now.
Yeah.
And it ended up really being a breakthrough experience for me, the pandemic, of deepening my spirituality, connecting, you know, to just a bigger collective story,
wow.
Right, that we were in it together.
Yeah.
But yeah, we started to dream up the tour, the End of Isolation tour, during the pandemic, and the Pulitzer Center got behind it. So it was a struggle bus. It was a struggle summer. I mean,
it was literally a struggle. It was a pretty struggle bus, because it was colorful and outside.
It was gorgeous. It was beautiful. I mean, you know, transformation, healing. These are this is being in the struggle. This is being, it's like being in the mud, being in the and we were in it together. I mean, most of the actors, the majority formerly incarcerated on the bus, mm-hmm. We drove through international heat wave.
I was thinking about that
100-year
on that bus.
Storm in St. Louis. That was the only show that we didn't actually perform out of 27. We performed every show on time to standing ovations. People, I mean, we often got multiple, one during intermission, one at the end.
Wow.
So it was like we kept getting the energy and like the juice back from the audience. Every time we stepped on the stage, it was like all the conflict, all the petty struggles around dishes. And I mean, this stuff is important, but it all dropped away, and we were just like so connected in the work, and everybody was so committed to making the work just live up to, you know, what it needed to be to honor the stories we were telling.
And the play is called The Box, and again, this film is about The Box. What does The Box mean, that title?
The Box is another way to refer to solitary confinement.
Okay.
The box, the hole.
Okay.
Being locked in a cell for 23 hours a day.
Okay. And so I'm going to play a clip. just to give people an idea of that play and how powerful it is. So in the beginning of the film, there's a dramatized reading of an essay written by someone incarcerated in solitary confinement. And these are stories and essays of real people that you all reenacted, dramatized, right?
Initially it started as letter correspondences that I did for several years, mm-hmm. and visited people in prisons, and that was my inspiration for writing the play.
Okay. So this essay that's dramatized is by someone named Jake Ju Chow, and so the actor reading it, is that your co-director, Bobby Field? Is that who that is?
Oh, no, that's not the actor.
Who was it that read that?
John.
Okay, my apologies. All right. So it's a long clip, so let's play that clip. Play it.
Life in the Hole by Jake Ju Chow. Outside, the world lulls people to sleep. But in here, I work hard to stay awake. I once read 87 hours straight, only stopping to eat or take a leak. Books are my life. I have to hide them if I want to hold on to them. Under my pillow, inside my mattress. After they sent me down here, my remaining family stopped writing. And I have no friends left on the outside. I've adapted much better than most guys, but do you ever think about the importance of looking out a window? After 10 days, your neurons begin to shrink. You start seeing flashing lights, hearing voices and footsteps that aren't there. You want air, like a mosquito wants blood. You want touch. This life is the slowest way to die.
Wow. Woo, that's deep. That is deep. What does solitary confinement do to people mentally and physically? The toll it can take.
Yeah. As the actor, you know, John Neblett, just read that scene from The Box, describes the slow deterioration of your mental capacity. There's all kinds of scientific studies that have shown that solitary confinement attacks the frontal lobe, mm-hmm. which is the part of our brains that help us make good decisions, that make us pro-social.
Yeah.
So solitary confinement slows down the brain. People have hallucinations, insomnia. Mm-hmm. It's like being a caged animal. I mean, you literally are a caged animal. So a lot of people end up pacing back and forth across their cell for years. I once saw a person's cell where they had worn a groove in the concrete.
Wow.
From pacing.
Wow. And, you know, you hear stories of people, they may have been in there for a day, they may have been in there for decades.
Exactly.
In solitary confinement. And then physically, I was reading that we need to move, you know, and that can affect you. And I know we were talking about this earlier, I used to work in mental health advocacy, and your mental health affects your physical health, and your physical health can affect your mental health. So if you're not moving, that can also bring up health issues too as well. I was reading, I think it's Solitary Watch. That's what I was reading there.
Totally. It compounds everything. It does exactly the opposite of what it's said, you know, meant to do, which is in some way rehabilitate people. The physical pain of isolation, the pain of isolation is like a physical pain. So people say, oh, solitary confinement, the UN says it's torture. It is definitely torture, but physical torture must be worse. But those of us who have experienced solitary confinement will tell you it's the same as physical pain. It's an excruciating anguish to be separated from everything that you love and not know if you'll ever get it back.
The film... one of the things that really caught my attention, well, a lot of things caught my attention in this film, but I was really interested in the history because I didn't know the history of where this comes from.
Yeah.
Can you break that down? Because I really was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, wow. When you broke that down in the film.
Yeah. So the End of Isolation film, it's one of the first scenes takes place in the Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. That's one of the 10 cities we went to on the tour that you talked about. And we performed inside the jail, the Eastern State Penitentiary, where solitary confinement was first invented by
Was it the Quakers?
Yeah,
I was surprised when I read that. Yeah.
Most people were shocked by that. They really thought that it was going to help people. They thought that removing people from the world, and they would put a hood over people's heads, would help remove them from the evil in the world, and mm-hmm. they would find God. And the opposite happened. People self-mutilated, did everything they could to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm. And so then they shut it down, right?
The Quakers were like, that was a bad idea. Yeah. They learned from their mistakes. They actually apologized.
Oh, wow.
And it wasn't, and at the right around that same time, Charles Dickens spoke out against the practice. It wasn't a common practice in the U.S. until much later. Even the Supreme Court did a ruling. They didn't ban it, but they did a ruling.
That's interesting that it shut down and then the U.S. still kept going with it.
With the so-called war on crime, which was actually a war on poverty in black and brown poor communities, the rise of mass incarceration, prisons became overbloated. It became a control mechanism. You had to threaten people with torture, and really more than a control mechanism because of terrible conditions, also it was a way to suppress resistance. From the beginning in our prisons, resistance has been people standing up for their human rights. Mm-hmm. Prisoner rights are human rights, and the way to silence people is to send them to the hole.
Yeah.
So it's a mechanism clearly designed to keep mass incarceration growing.
And resistance is what inspired you to do this film.
Everything
and
I do.
And it's everything you do.
That's what I wanted to say. Yeah,
the California prison hunger strike. You said today's the anniversary of it. Mm-hmm. That was in 2013 for 2 months in the summer of 2013. About 29,000 California inmates refused to eat. They were protesting against solitary confinement and other inhumane conditions. And I read that this is the longest and largest hunger strike in the state. So how did that influence? Now, that influenced the box and
that happened shortly, just a year and a half after I got out of prison. So for me to be able to throw a lot of my pain, to connect my healing mm-hmm. to what was happening in my country, to people, to my neighbors, my incarcerated neighbors, was very empowering. I'm a movement person. I was born into the movement.
Okay. Because your mom's an activist.
My
too,
mom's an activist. I saw her leave my abusive father when I was a kid, start a new life for us.
Wow.
So it was like from the beginning, it was like, yeah, we're fighters in my family. It's part of my, I believe it's part of my lineage, my Irish roots. we are lovers and we're fighters. And so to be able to connect that to my struggle, to other struggles, has always been an impulse that I learned from my own mom and my own family. And the hunger strike, 13 years, that event influenced people and inspired people all across the country.
Yeah.
And the film, you talked about the film being about the tour of our play. That is the connective tissue.
Right.
But really, the film is about people across the country on the front lines that we went to the cities where change was happening.
Right. And somebody started, I said, I hadn't heard about this.
I like to say, we went where the juice is. We went where things were like exciting, right? And we wanted to use our art and add to that momentum. And we went to places like St. Louis where there's an epic battle to shut down a jail.
Yes.
And so the film is the face of a movement, you know? A lot, the same with my play. My work is never really the traditional protagonist, antagonist. I mean, the protagonist is the movement, right? The movement to reimagine justice outside of prisons and jails. The antagonist, clearly, the prisons and jails. But it's not just one person making this change, right? And so the film has many faces. It has some stories that we really follow more closely.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to give people a taste of just like how rich and multifaceted this movement is.
Let me tell folks where they can see the film. All right. So if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Sarah Short, executive producer and director of the documentary The End of Isolation. The film is about a group of anti-prison activists who travel to 10 cities across the U.S. to perform a play about solitary confinement in our country's prison system. And the film features prison rights activists who are creating change in their communities, as she just said. And so you can watch Sarah's film, The End of Isolation, during Brave Maker Film Fest in Redwood City, and it's happening on Sunday, July 12th. So I want to go back to these activists that you mentioned. We have about 10 minutes left. But Definitely. Inez, what's Inez?
Bordeaux. Inez Bordeaux.
Inez Bordeaux was part of the Close the Workhouse campaign in St. Louis.
Yes.
And this jail was a debtor's jail where most of those locked up were Black people. And the conditions were inhumane. And I was shocked because,
yeah,
spoiler, they shut it down.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why, I mean, I couldn't make a depressing film. In the times we're living through, like, I couldn't physically do it. And I also can't put that out there. We don't need more. Like, I needed to make a hopeful film. But it's hard to make a hopeful film about prisons because it's heavy stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, stuff that I'm inspired by the resistance. But even with the resistance, it's still heavy for a lot of, like, my audience.
Mm-hmm.
But this film is for young people. I wanted young people to feel like change is possible.
Yeah.
And I feel like at a certain point, spirit touched this film. You know, I'm a spiritual person. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're in the flow of creativity, the hardest thing was figuring out how to end it with people feeling the gravity of the problem, how much work we have to do.
Yeah.
Because, like, prison system is the history of America, right? And the history of racial control. But the workhouse campaign, I was so grateful that we focused on that because it has, like you said, like the day that we got the call that they were sending bulldozers to tear it down, like literally raise it to the ground. I knew that was the ending for our film.
And that jail had existed for decades. And I was like, wow. And coming from California, I was like, a debtor's jail? That sounds so
archaic.
Yes, that's the word. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get out of my head, Sarah.
I mean, it is archaic. There's a lot of things about this country that are archaic,
right,
unfortunately.
Yeah, when you go outside. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's stuff in California, but definitely especially when you go outside of California. I said, they have a debtor's jail? And then, like, people could walk down the street and see, because it was a heat wave, and, like, people, they were burning up. They were hot.
Yeah.
And so they would bring tubs of ice, but they would melt immediately because it was super, super. It was like 110 degrees or something in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And heat gets people going.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to some resistance. That was amazing.
I mean, just the fact alone that people like Inez Bordeaux can come out of the most inhumane, hopeless conditions, mm-hmm, and come out with, like, vision and capacity to do something that is near impossible. I mean, like, shut down a jail, like, it doesn't happen. Like she says in the film, you'll see them shut down a jail when they absolutely have to, when it's, like, it's deemed, you know, inhabitable.
Right.
But then they'll build another one. And in St. Louis, that hasn't happened. So that is the true spirit of our movement, is decarceration. We don't want to tinker around the edges. Even abolishing solitary confinement, of course we want that, because solitary confinement is torture. But we have to make sure they don't put something else in its place. So when you decarcerate, that means there's less people in prisons and jails. That's progress. That means less people being tortured, less people being brutalized.
And there's also, too, a great activist, Kaleem Nazim, who's co-director of Decarcerate. And when you look at the spelling of it, the AR is capitalized because they're in Little Rock, Arkansas, too, as well. And so he's doing work. I was shocked. Because he was put in solitary confinement because he wouldn't pick cotton.
He wouldn't pick cotton.
And I was, again, archaic, you know, what year are we living in? And just looking at the, you know, prison conditions in different parts of the country, but also, too, seeing how people are taking steps to make change was really, just really, really interesting in a film.
And that's what's really important to me, is that people understand, like, I mean, truth is value I hold. I recently got feedback from a friend that I'm, like, relentless about my truth, telling the truth.
Okay.
And it's like, well, yeah, I am, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't want people to be depressed by it, but I want them to ground themselves in reality,
mm-hmm,
that our prisons are the way they are, not by neglect, not by mistake, but by design. They were meant to maintain the status quo of racial oppression in this country and to maintain a hierarchy of poverty and inequality. And they're still doing that job. They're not doing what they're telling us it's going to do. They're telling us they're making us safer, and they're not. And I'm not saying that people don't need to be taken out of society, that there shouldn't be consequences for harm.
And that was my next question. Mm. I wanted to know, what was your vision? You know, if I can give you a magic wand, like, how would you envision the justice system when it comes to that? Because I'm sure there's some people listening who may have been victims of really, you know, horrible crimes.
Yeah.
And they're like,
which I completely understand. That's happened in my own family.
Yeah.
And I would never, and I would never get between someone saying that someone that hurt them should be put away and to be stopped from hurting someone else. Mm. But it's not going to fix the root of the problem. Prisons have not made our society less violent. They've made our society more violent, piling trauma on trauma. So the vision is address the root causes, right? We don't pour fire on fire. We pour water, right? We uplift the people that are most poor, most desperate in our society, and we look at what are the root causes of crime. People that are trying to feed their children, you know? Yeah. People that are addicted to drugs. So you could cut our prison population in half overnight, and that would not be a problem. Half those people would never go back. They would never commit crime again. Satanya Emile DeWeaver, the listening guide of the film, says that, and I deeply believe that to be true. The other half, that's going to take some time. We're going to have to look at each, you know, each person as a human, right, not a number, and figure out, why did you do this? Like, this is what, that's what restorative or transformative justice is. And that's a movement across this country, mm-hmm. looking at people as individuals. Why did you do this? Not just, you're a bad person, let's lock you away and throw away the key. Because the reality is that person is going to come back out into our streets. So how are we serving ourselves by not looking at their humanity?
Yeah, and then if you have a record, you can't get a job. And so people...
Vicious cycle.
Yes, yeah, it's a vicious cycle. Now, you were in the box, right?
I acted
did
in
you
it.
Play, was that you playing a prison guard?
Yeah, that was me.
What? Is that Sarah? What was that like for you?
I mean,
I was not expecting that.
We could only fit 8 people in the bus, so everybody had to play multiple hats, you know?
Yeah.
But it was, you know, I mean, it was exciting and interesting for me. Acting is a trip, you know? You really have to feel it. I've been close with a lot of actors because I've been, you know, co-directing, mm-hmm. and, you know, obviously as a playwright. But you can't just go up there and act angry. You have to be angry.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah. So you really have to tap in. So I have a lot of anger. I've always had a lot of anger. Mm-hmm. And it was nice to let that anger out on stage.
Really?
Even though I had to get over myself of feeling like terrible about being such a horrible woman, you know, but I also, the prison guard was, you know, she's just a horrible woman.
Right.
But I had to understand why she was that way,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And so I got into it.
Okay. Because I wonder, I said, how was she able to do that? I'm just thinking because your past experience.
I tapped into my anger. Yeah.
Okay. And we have about a minute and a half left, but I know we were talking earlier, you know, because of your history, that's what you're known as, right? Like when people meet you, they're like, oh, I know you from, I read that story.
Yeah. The lady that was in Iran.
Mm-hmm. But there's so much more to you, Sarah. So.
Yes, indeed.
I know there's other things in your life.
Things that bring me so much joy. Not that this brings me joy, too.
Okay. Yeah.
But go ahead,
because I was reading your bio. You do healing arts and spiritual practices. So
yeah, that's where I came from today.
What other stuff are you passionate about? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a somatic coach.
Okay.
So breakthrough coaching. I love working. I mean, I've been doing in the healing arts also my whole life. Mm-hmm. I started out as a massage practitioner, but now I work with people, a lot of artists, activists, women and queer people that are just like using their trauma to propel themselves into, you know, their best selves,
yeah.
right? Like really like transforming through the fire
yeah.
of what we've been through
yeah.
and creating amazing things, just following your longing.
Yeah.
So I really love coaching.
Well, Sarah, this really was, I was just really moved by the film. It was only an hour and I learned so much.
Mm-hmm.
And so
thank you
for braving that hot school bus, that hot pretty school bus.
Absolutely.
To go around the country and do this play. Are you going to bring the box back? Any chance?
Oh, you know, I got to keep it moving. I mean, you know, the film is now my focus. I have this wonderful group of interns right now that the whole focus, like what gets me out of bed with this is like the young people that need to see this film, right? That's the North Star and be inspired and know that change is possible. It's not inevitable, but like Inez Inez's daughter says in the film, given we do the work, we can destroy these systems that are oppressing us. And when you watch the film, I hear people coming out and saying they just are washed over with the possibility and the hope of that. And that's what I want young people to feel. So we're trying to get this into colleges. We want to do a college tour.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, good luck with that, because it's definitely very educational, too. Yeah. And entertaining in a good way. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah. In a good way, in a lightning way.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sarah Shore's documentary is called The End of Isolation, and you can watch it during Brave Maker Film Festival in Redwood City, and that's happening on Sunday, July 12th. I can't believe it's July already. Coming up, a Bay Area man who uplifts people with his gift of storytelling, and he has such an interesting life. Stay with us.